This is a conspiracy. That's what this is.
One big damn conspiracy! And everyone's in on it!
I know what's going on.
Did IQs just drop sharply while I was away?
The person is smart. People are dumb, panicky, dangerous animals, and you know it.
Did you see the memo about this?
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
Don't you see what this means? This is it! This is the beginning of everything! I've been waiting for this all my life!
Welcome to episode 57 of Your Missing the Point podcast, where we discuss the weird, the wonderful, and the downright bizarre aspects of life, as we have conversations with people from all over the world. Today I'm joined by a heavy hitter within the liberty and freedom movement, a woman who's used her humble beginnings in radio to develop her critical thinking skills to pull back the layers and find the truth. She's a wife, a mother, and a heck of a podcaster. Let us welcome the one and only Monica Perez. Welcome, Monica.
Thank you so much, Drew. I'm super psyched to be here. I've been enjoying your shows. I was actually a little late because I was riveted to your recent conversation with Fozzie, the Aussie.
Ah, yes. What a character he is.
Yes. It was so fascinating. I just hearing about India from somebody who stayed there for a while. So I like your style and I'm super psyched to have a conversation with you myself.
I very much appreciate that. I'm surprised it's taken us this long to chat to each other considering we've got some mutual friends.
Yes, I know.
Chadax and Lani, one of some of the best people I've met. The first people that are on this podcast, in fact.
No way. Well, Lani's coming on my show in a few weeks to give the top 10 things that normies can do to be a little more self-sufficient. Like if you can't step off the grid, like what can you do? She encouraged my sauerkraut and bone broth skills and things like that. So if I can do it, anyone can do it. So they're a great resource for that. And of course, our mutual friend Stella, who we call Stilla. Who I think you also call Stilla, but you think that says Stella.
debatable. I think it's just the way we say it correctly with the King's English, not to be a snob, but there we go. It's all accents, right?
No, I will say something about accents, though. You can tell the accents that are from that the colonizers are using versus the colonized. So like Irish people and Scottish people and South Africans, whatever, they sound like they're speaking a foreign language. But like Australians, Canadians, Americans, they do not sound like they're speaking a foreign language. It's like other like the places where, whatever, that the like Gaelic was the language or Dutch or whatever. Like you can tell it's a foreign, English is a foreign language. They don't know any other language, but English is foreign language. But so I consider us on the side of being like fully deracinated or whatever.
It's that old Anglo-American empire that seems to have taken off so voraciously over time.
Yeah, I heard you guys saying that you thought you'd be a republic. I was like, they don't think they're a republic? I guess not.
I really hope we don't become a republic one day. But anyway, it's a choice between... It's like team at blue and team red. I don't think it's much of a choice either way, however it goes. But here we are. It's 2024. We're coming into another US election cycle. And I thought it'd be good to have a chat with you today about what's happened within the freedom movement since, say, the time of COVID. I found that the past 3 years, 2019 into, say, 2021, was this grand unifying time where everyone seemed to have the veil lifted of what was happening with governments and overreach in the world. And people saw a common enemy or a common threat, something that was really encroaching upon our freedoms across the West, which was fantastic because it brought so many people together. But since then, we no longer seem to really have that common threat, that common enemy. And I'm starting to see what I hope isn't coming true, but the nigglings of fractures within the freedom movement. And it's not just within the United States. I'm seeing it happen within Australia as well, that groups are starting to form and segregate from one another that used to be on fantastic speaking terms and what you would consider to be allies against, you know, the establishment that is the government in general.
Yeah, I have all sorts of little notes here written down as you were speaking, because I have thoughts on this stuff. First of all, I think the libertarian movement, like in the US, I was definitely an early adopter of like being an anarcho-capitalist. I remember I stumbled onto a radio show. I was not born for broadcasting, and I happened to be talking about my anarcho-capitalist awakening to a woman I met like at a baby shower, bridal shower or something. And she was just fascinated by the whole thing. And she was a radio producer and she got me on to do radio. But I remember getting an email when I was first on the air, which was within earshot of Auburn, Alabama, which is like the mothership of the Mises Institute and all that. And the guy wrote, he's like, I literally like spit out my coffee in the car when I heard a host on WSB radio saying she was an anarcho-capitalist. Like, what the heck? It was that crazy. And I was the only person who would take Ron Paul phone calls on the air. And that was 2012. So like 12 years ago. And since then, it kind of like hit an arc. And now I feel like for a minute, I was like, you know what? My suspicions, my theoretical problem with anarcho-capitalism as being a stepping stone to world government, not to 7 billion sovereign citizens, because if you do erase the nation state, could go either way. And now I think it's obvious that that's what it's for. Like that's why it was put in there. I don't think Murray Rothbard was insincere, because he's the one who noticed it. He was like, oh, when the Soviet Republic broke up and some, I don't know if it was the Russian countries or whatever, but people were using immigration as a weapon to change, you know, to like reverse, or it's like literally colonize other countries. And he said, you know, this is a problem. And that's when I started saying libertarians die by the sword, but they won't live by it. You know, you won't take your unemployment check, but you'll rally for open borders. And I understand it. It's a principle. What can you do? Like you're forced to pay unemployment. You're not forced to take the check, but then you have to think of the reality where we live. So I started thinking of myself for one brief moment. I was like, I'm kind of post-libertarian. And then I said to Lanny, I was like, you know, I hear people saying that and there's something a little funny about it. She said, yeah. Like that means something. And what it means, what they want it to mean, and I heard you talking to Fozzie about this, I think hinting at this idea, it's not going to be new to you, of wanting people to really polarize and getting that crowd who's just disgusted with the corrupt system that constantly veers to the left, to a pathological left, to like, you know, trans children, which isn't even, you know, it's a sexual term applied to children without parental consent. Like it's just, it's meant to polarize, really. Like that veer to the pathological left is meant to the reaction is the action. It's meant to get people to go to the pathological right. And so post-libertarianism then became this, seems to be a movement towards a more nationalistic viewpoint, but not like a raw egg nationalism, you know, not like a nationalism. It's like, I have a nation, but a nationalism and all that that implies. So it was almost like, I'm not sure. The way I think that the grand schemers scheme is they have a bunch of possible options and anyone, it's like that Bandersnatch Black Mirror. Do you guys get Black Mirror?
Yeah, choose your own it's ending type thing. Of deal.
Yeah, but isn't it always the same ending? Like, I think you can watch it and every single path you take gets to the same ending. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe there are two endings. I don't know. But in the end, the same producers are getting the same ad dollars. Yeah,
they've gamed it out to every single possibility they could think of. They're not dumb people. And I think we often fall for the trap that governments are incompetent. They can't do their job. They can't balance a budget, blah, blah, blah. But
no way.
It's really savvy what they're doing. And the majority of people don't see it. And I think because that Overton window has been pushed so far to the left, like you said, we're getting that extreme swing back now where we're seeing what I would consider to be some ultra-nationalism occurring as a byproduct of libertarianism almost failing. Because as you said, it had that peak and then it crashed drastically. And I often do compare the ideas of libertarianism and communism being very similar because they work fantastically in theory. And on paper, it's a great way to look at it, but in practice it doesn't seem to work well, or it can't possibly work with the system we've currently got.
Well, I wouldn't go that far. What I would say is any alternative that gets any wind under its sails is going to be hijacked. So whether they started it in the first place or they just hijacked it, I don't think it's theoretically impossible. I mean, I use this example of, like, I was a waitress for many years and we used to make $2 an hour. And then Reagan, who I liked, but he came in and had taxes applied. So then I would get basically a paycheck that was zero. And you would just work for tips. But unlike other countries, when you tell people other countries this, they're horrified. This was 30 years ago. I was making $17 an hour after taxes easily. And I mean, so it was great. It's awesome. And now if I had that job, I'm sure I'd be making $35 an hour after taxes easily. And it's unskilled labor. It's like the one way where a woman could get, be independent, take care of her kids and stuff, not be on welfare. And for men, it was construction. So that's where I came from, basically, truck drivers and stuff like that. And where is I going with that? Hold on, don't go away. Oh, yes, the tips. So what happened was in all my years, I think I was a waitress for 7 years, I can't really actually remember anyone ever stiffing me. And almost never did anyone not give me at least 15%. And mainly the enforcement mechanism was like shame, guilt, just a sense of fairness, gratitude. But it wasn't illegal not to tip. Nobody could arrest you or anything. I could maybe embarrass you in front of your friends. And that was it. And, you know, and thousands of checks, everybody paid because for social reasons. So I think anarcho-capitalism would work like that. I think real consequences and social pressure work, but they've set it up so that everybody who's going to spend their energy on libertarianism, I used to spend energy on it. Like people have the right to work and travel. I think maybe the whole thing was about immigration, you know, but it was about breaking down the nation state and create. So I don't think that it's impossible in theory. I don't think it would even be impossible in practice. I think it's impossible, like communism. I think that I'm not a fan, but when I talk to people on the left who talk about what's happening in Latin America right now and historically, and some of these indigenous people, they're like, you know what? Yeah, okay, we're not as smart as you, or we don't have the savvy, the education, the capitalist history, whatever, but we do have... We do sit on commodities that have value, and we want to sell them as a country rather than divvy up all the land and have each native person decide how much his little lease is worth. You know, that actually is kind of like what happened to Russia when they went to capitalists. Like, they gave them all these stocks in the stuff, and they were like, this has got to be garbage. And they were selling it for 10 cents on the dollar. It made people billionaires because they were worth something. But individuals, like, you know, aren't always ready for that, for the conspiracy.
So would you say it's more so the parasite class taking the wheel of the ship, so to speak, in whatever political or societal framework that's in place and just exploiting it for their own means? Because we saw that in communism. The idea in communism on paper is that the people in a society all contribute and all share the wealth and what happens. But we saw that the high-level leaders of the Bolsheviks, they were essentially became the KGB over time, and they had the money, they had the wealth, and they manipulated the system for their own benefit. Would you say that there are bad elements within the libertarian movement who have kind of co-opted the same things? That may not necessarily be libertarians themselves, but could be plants?
First, I want to correct the record. I abhor the communists, like, give from your capacity and take by your need. Like, abhor, because it doesn't, can't possibly work. I am not getting off my ass. You're going to have to whip me if I don't get every last... There are so many things I would rather do than work. So I'm not working if... I'm not saying, like, this is work, but, like, busting my ass as a waitress. If they were like, well, we're going to only give you the same as this person can't. No. So I'm not, I want to just make sure nobody thinks that I think that's a good idea. You know, I, this sounds crazy, but when I was little, I was totally raised by, my father was a libertarian, basically classical liberal. And so I was raised at his knee totally. And I remember when I was lit, like maybe 10, I wrote a letter to the Libertarian Party saying, if you win though, what'll stop you from just liking the power? And they never wrote me back, but I remember thinking like, I just don't understand it. Like, you want power. And I found a little diary of my own from when I was then. And it said, it was like a little workbook. And it said, what would you do if you were president? And I said, resign. So I understood the concept pretty young. And I just feel like it's, I mean, are there people, I don't,
Or is it a case that the public perception is we're once burnt, twice shy when it comes to anyone who puts themselves in a leadership position? Because historically, we've always tended to see the case through political and government overreach that the people who put themselves into power aren't there because there's a need for society and they don't want to do it. It's just for the betterment of everyone. It's they're there to feather their own nests. And we're dubious about that.
I have an answer to what you're saying. Like, I understand completely. So I don't remember what year it was. I think it was maybe 2016. I don't know. The Libertarian Party. So there are a lot of libertarians who consider themselves small L libertarians. And then there's the Libertarian Party. So the Libertarian Party not only nominated Gary Johnson as their presidential candidate, but the way the Libertarian Party works is the president doesn't pick the vice president. You nominate the vice president separately. And he urged them and they did it. They elected as their nominated William Weld, which he was a disgraceful and disgraced, terrible rhino Republican in name only governor of Massachusetts. Just awful in every way. He actually authored, I believe he was the main signatory author of a Council on Foreign Relations paper called the North American Union that advised that the three countries become one and that if any laws are in conflict, the strictest law would be the law. So environmental laws, labor law, the strictest law. William Weld, that he was on the Libertarian ticket. And when he was interviewed that day about the honor, he said, you know, I was reading the platform this morning and I like it. And it's like, this morning, I should have been, you know what I mean? You should have been elected. So once that happens, it's over. Now, people have since come in and been disgusted by that and have taken the reins of it. But yeah, like you said, once bitten, twice shy. I mean, and then they had the opportunity during COVID. I talked to a lawyer. You would like this guy, Anthony Raimondo. He's like, yeah. So I decided, he was a lawyer and he helped people get out of these lockdowns. And I remember when I was talking, I'm a lawyer by education, but I really wouldn't know the first thing about how to help people fight these mandates that we have process. Like, that's another problem I have with the anarcho-capitalism stuff now, is that if you abandon the process, I'm not talking about voting. Like, voting is just data collection, whatever. But if you abandon the process of defending yourself, you let it goes away. You have to exercise these things or people aren't aware of them and they set terrible precedents, whatever. So during that lockdown, like, every single solitary thing was illegal, in my opinion, everything from Trump's executive emergency order, every single thing. And we could have just fought it. And I just didn't understand why nobody was fighting it. Anthony Raimondo was the one guy who fought it, and he just fought it in his town. He's like, any business that doesn't want to shut down, let me know. I'll send a letter to the court. You have to have a hearing. And then if they don't give you a hearing, you don't have to shut down. And the court was closed. So there were no hearings. And every single solitary person who wanted to stay open did that. That was as simple as that. And he said, well, I just decided to hook up with the Libertarian guys, the party, whatever, and just because we needed to start taking some action. And he was just disgusted because he said they just did nothing. And, you know, they had another bad like candidate. And I feel like the opportunity for us to rally around, I remember trying to get people to go to Washington and just march against the executive order because we marched against Obamacare, and all the same people who are at Obamacare, they wouldn't come. They said, march against your governor. It's like, but it won't be the same. They're relying on this, you know, executive order. So I feel like it just, they've had opportunities and it didn't work. But I don't like shit talking people. So they can do their thing, and maybe, like, I liked Ron Paul. Ron Paul, he said he'd never run as Libertarian, only as Republican, because you just don't have the platform. So he would run as a presidential candidate so he could get his ideology out there. And boy, he exposed those people. That one time he was at South Carolina and he talked about the golden rule in foreign policy, like do unto others. And it was at some, like, literally called the Christian University, and they booed him.
I suppose that's kind of the way, if there is a political answer anymore, that you almost need to game the system in which it's been gamed against us for the past 40 years. I don't think there's going to be any hard and fast solution to all the problems we have that can happen overnight. It's going to have to be gradually introduced, and we're going to have to, unfortunately, play the game a little bit to what they did. But hopefully we can be a bit savvy and learn from what they've done and even their mistakes and come out better on top.
I don't have a lot of hope in organized resistance. Which, you know, kind of means you don't have a lot of hope. But, like, I actually just, when you look at that giant kind of wheel of history, it feels like their movements just, things change so much. And so for me, my only hope, like, I look at Ron Paul, I can't think of anything that Ron Paul did or said that would cast doubt on his sincerity. He reminds me a lot of my father. By their deeds, you will know them, you know. So I'm not going to say that, but people like to say he's limited hangout, whatever. And Rand Paul's a compromiser, whatever. Trump is ridiculous. Like, there's no chance in my mind, like, anyone who thinks that he's real is like regular people. You know, like the people at the soccer game and stuff, when they like Trump, I like them. I'm like, obviously you're sick of it. You've got some courage. That's great. But, you know, when I'm talking to people who mostly are awake and maybe podcasters or whatever, and they're like, you know, I don't know, like, he could trust the plan. I'm like, that's ridiculous. So he is obviously a limited hangout. But if they are giving me Ron Paul, who gets people to burn, college students to burn dollar bills, while holding, you know, by reciting the Bill of Rights, not just holding it up, or they want to give me Donald Trump, who gets people excited by saying mean things to Democrats, I want the guy who's pounding the table for the Bill of Rights. And that's a limited hangout I could get behind. So I just feel like, and when he was running and I was on the radio and I took those calls, I couldn't believe how many people were calling and reflecting back to me everything I had grown up with from my father, but I didn't know anyone who thought that way, because I was from New York, which is super Democrat. And but then this radio station was in Atlanta. I'd lived in Texas, and I realized that there were people out there who were Republicans. And then I realized that Republicans, even the people, they're just voting in their interests a lot of times. But I was amazed at how many people just loved the principled, foundational ideas that I was talking about. And I realized that this country had handed that down generation to generation to generation, to the point where I'd asked my aunt, I called my aunt after my father is dead. And I said, oh, Aunt Margaret, I just read this book. You would love it. You would love it. It's called The Law by Frederick Bastiat. And she said, Monica, my dear girl, Daddy gave each and every one of us children that book for our 12th birthday, and we were expected to read it. And I was like, wow. Now, she grew up in the projects, but she became an English teacher, and she talked like she was from Connecticut. It was fantastic. But she knew all about it. And here I was rediscovering it, because it was in me. And I discovered all those people, and I thought, they'll never break the chain. But Trump broke the chain. Trump broke the chain. So what I'm saying to you is, and I hate breaking the chain with stuff like preserved foods, like Lonnie and Chud, with gun culture, you know, teaching kids how to be respectful around guns, how to use them, what they're for, making sure everybody knows everybody's got a gun. You know, gun culture is important, not to break the chain. And that the real, that's why, like, having immigrants in the army or like something that could turn against the people is dangerous, not because they're immigrants, but because this is stuff that's intergenerational in your, like, it's like an archetypal type thing. And I feel like that is actually the hope, not resistance, not armed resistance, but like a return to foundational values and pass them on to your kids and make sure, because we might have the advantage because vaxxed people will be able to have more kids probably. So there's, and you know, people don't believe in abortion and whatever. So I feel like that is the answer, is that it has to be in our hearts. We just have to be rooted to the ground. That's why I really don't like people going fully off grid. So I want Lanny to tell us how we can stay in the world and still have some independence and like non-reliance.
And there's always the effect that you can only run away for so long until they track you down and find you anyway. And
or they're not threatened by you. So
yeah,
they're not looking for you because they want us to go.
You become an Aldous Huxley wildling type of creature that lives out in the wilds of the world, is just a non sequitur for them and they don't care. You mentioned something before that kind of rang true in my mind and sparked a bit of a thought right now, that the culture war is so important, having those values and building back what we once had as the Western nations, arguably, has kind of faded away. But could the idea of Trump be an absolute perfect chess play by the elites, that he appeals to so many people as like this cultural change because he's not an air quotes politician. He's there to drain the swamp and all these lovely things that we hear from the MAGA people. And, you know, it sounds great. You want someone who's different. You want someone to challenge the status quo. But it seems a little bit too convenient that he comes along just at the right time when people, as of 2016, when the libertarian movement was growing and this idea of going back to traditionalism. He just appears out of nowhere.
Definitely.
And as an Australian, I'm absolutely gobsmacked by it because he has such a huge following in my country, which I know America kind of dictates and exports its culture to the world, whether that's geopolitics, whether it's culture in general, entertainment. We end up getting it anyway, but that as Australians in the truth of community, they're putting so much faith in an American president to solve all their problems. It's the idea of trust the plan, just it doesn't gel well with critical thinking, and it's always challenged me that he has such a fundamentalist following in a lot of ways.
Definitely, without doubt, I've said this many times, they gave us Trump to hijack the Ron Paul movement. Ron Paul won Iowa in 2012. Iowa used to be the decider of who was going to be the presidential nominee. Ron Paul won Iowa. I always want people to understand that, because that's where the zeitgeist was, and they needed to get rid of that. So there are famous clips of how they have all the winners and the newscasters don't read the Ron Paul. And actually they said he came in second or third, which he did not. It's look in Wikipedia. He won, and they lied about it. And then even to the extent they couldn't lie, they covered it up. So they had to hijack that. And they did it with Trump. And so they suppressed him, whereas Trump spent zero campaign dollars, unprecedented, and won. And I had like this whole extensive, like, you know, I never stopped adding to it how crazy it was, how much media attention he got, how little money. Like, there was hidden audio of people on the liberal channels going, you know, after hours saying, yeah, just go on easy on Trump, blah, blah, blah. Like, it was obvious. And the head of CNN, which I attribute to for his election, you know, the one to be afraid of is Trump. We're afraid of Trump. Hey, Republicans, Democrats are afraid of Trump. Like, it was perfect. He was Trump's boss in The Apprentice, where he taught Trump to be the boss to the world. So it all seemed like it was very set up to hijack that energy. And I think the rest of a lot of other countries are getting like copycats or pseudo copycats. And even like, so Bolsonaro was a copycat, but like the Argentine guy is like the libertarian version crazy hair. Like they literally like have conversations about when his sister recommended he start wearing his hair crazy. Like, ugh. And then this trust the plan thing, I remember very distinctly because I was on the radio and had this guy, Maurice, used to call me all the time. And he would say, like, he was right about conspiracies. You don't want to hear about it. And sometimes I was like, dude, like, I'm going to get fired if you say this stuff because it goes a little like calls people out. And then he called me one time on the air. I always took his call first and he called me like I could cry. He was like, oh, don't worry about it. Just trust the plan. And I was like, Maurice. And he's like, no, there are going to be 60,000 indictments. Just wait. It makes me sad that you're hopeless. I'm like, I'm not hopeless. I just don't have hope that there are going to be 60,000 indictments in October of people. You know, Hillary's not going to jail. What are you thinking? And he was like, no, they're all getting arrested. I know, who wants them to get arrested? You don't want them to get arrested. I want to restore the Bill of Rights. That is what I want. I want to restore the Bill of Rights. So you're talking about this cultural move, but what? It's just like the 60s. You know, counter cultural revolution, whatever, they tore down something scaffolding that was strong and had a lot of value. And they took the things that were wrong with it, which were definitely wrong with it, and they just used it to pull the whole thing down. And what did they replace it with? Really nothing. And they all were, when they wanted their money, they were Democrat, they were Republican Democrats. They went and voted for Reagan. And then, you know, with this, like, I don't really understand. Give me the structure, the scaffolding of the new culture, which all we really want is the old culture that Trump has given us a plan for. You know, I don't even care about the plan. What's the goal?
Yeah, hopium is a very addictive drug. I found that a lot of people, when they follow this particular movement, and not so much the MAGA people, because I think there's two distinctive groups. There's people who genuinely still believe in the political process and that Trump is a possibility. And then there's the far end Q community, which have the even more in the weeds kind of murky ideas of what's going on. Like you said, the indictments, there's mass arrests, military tribunals, all this crazy stuff. And I listened to a populist in Australia, and that's the term I'm giving these people that are popping up, like Bolsonaro and the Argentinian presidents. They're giving us a perception of someone who's not a politician but is popular with the people. So these populists, they're the average kind of person, yet they're from huge amounts of wealth and disconnected from the average worker anyway. But somehow they're just us and they're working on our behalf. Australia has a populist in our country who's an ex-SAS, so Special Service Military General, who's coming out and saying that, you know, there's bunkers and we're saving kids from bunkers under Melbourne. They saved 5 million children, saying all these wild, outlandish things, which through common sense and logic and even a 5 minute bit of research can prove it's completely false. Because in a state that only has 6.5 million, I'm pretty sure you would notice the doubling of the population overnight. That would be entirely children. We would notice that. But the yes. amount of people that buy into it, it's the fantasy element of it that hooks people along with the hopium that, yeah, it's, and it really belittles the average person that you can't change your own circumstances. You have to wait for someone else to do it. And that really does put us in a left-wing victim mentality that we're our own victims and we can't save ourselves.
That's why I feel like we have to... The only thing you can do, this is where it comes in handy to believe in God. And I don't know how much you listen to me and people make fun of me because I'm always like, look, it is really, really, really hard for me. I'm very like, I don't even know what the term concrete thinker is, but I'm very mathy. It's hard for me to like imagine that my body is going to be in a coffin with my brain inside my skull and I'm going to be having a conversation with God and he is going to know my name. Like it's very, very hard for me to get my mind around that. However, I have witnessed the power of prayer. Jesus never fails me, never. It's crazy. Like the only time I think prayer does not work is if there's an opposing will. That's what I say. Like, druggies, you can't really fix their problems because they don't until they want. If they came to you and said, pray with me, you know, you'd pray with them and you'd lock the door and you'd sit there for 2 weeks and that, you know, there's no opposing will. You've got your prayers and you would help them. But it's the opposing will that's a problem. But so for me, we really only have one, you know, even it's Pascal's theory, wager, we only have one job here, and that's to save our souls. And I would say do your best to help your children save their souls. And in that context, you know, even, and if you want to go like real trad cat, like I was raised, you know, there's like layers of heaven. And my father used to say, I just want to crawl onto the door before the, you know, before it closes. Like I will be, you know, I will be a janitor in heaven. It's fine. I'll do whatever. I need no exaltation whatsoever. And I understand that. So, but if there were like degrees of enlightenment, degrees of heaven, like, if heaven were to be, you know, you can't have jerks in heaven, which is why probably jerks don't go to heaven. So this life is an opportunity to living in this awful time right now. And it's a beautiful, glorious time. I actually saw the cherry blossoms in Japan. It's a beautiful world. It's a great world. It's, you know, Jesus, God said it's good. But if you, the opportunity that this presents us is, it's a constantly filled with temptations to compromise. And I feel like you cannot compromise. You have to like start with charity, you know, start with the virtues and see what you can do. And if in your actual everyday life, that's enough. Like I can't even do that. Like there are people in my family, in my life that like, it's very hard for me to just love equally with other people or at all. And it's a lot of work and taking care of the people, like my old mom, my son who has Down syndrome, like these are opportunities. And you can get very distracted and depressed if you look at the chemtrails, you know, like it's super a bummer, but you know, you have to rise above it. And then, and what Stella and I were talking about is if you do that, and like one of my mom's dying admonitions to my listeners was pray for world peace. And we were talking about like, if you actually do that, even if there isn't a God, the positive, our only hope is hope, you know, is the positive energy. And I feel like if you had that, then you wouldn't need an organized movement. People would just not believe, they would not compromise, because that's what propaganda is for. It's to get you to ignore your own values, your own training, the evidence of your own eyes and your own life, and make you think that there is a danger out there so great that you have to give up on the Bill of Rights. You have to think of other people as animals, give up on the Ten Commandments. You have to treat outside people different from inside people, which is totally unchristlike. Like that's what it's all about. And all I'd say is you don't have to believe me that it's all a pack of lies. You don't have to do that, but you can't compromise on those principles. And if you die tomorrow and it all goes to shit, so what?
Yeah, Stella uses a really great analogy that everyone who gets into the conspiracy realm of ideas and thinking and starts their deep levels of research, inevitably you start off red-pilled and that's what gets you thinking. And eventually everyone ends up in the black-pilled region. But you almost end up moving beyond that. And Stella calls it clear-pilled. It's just the reality of what the world is. Well, you know that there's a lot of shitty things going on. Like you said, if you look at the chemtrails every day and you look at what's happening to our children in our public schools and all these attacks we're constantly under, yeah, the world is depressing. But if you realize, okay, this is the reality that I'm in, but appreciate the beauty that's within it and what can I do to put myself and my family in a better position so that we are saved. What do we do in this physical space to make sure that we're helping others so that they hopefully they can get a leg up and get their foot in the door?
Totally. And things like making sauerkraut, like I consider that like a virtue. I'm serious. Like I feel like passing on these little the way to have self-confidence and independence are really important, and we need to pass those things down. But the black pill thing, in my opinion, one of the, if not just one of the major goals of the conspiracy theory psyop. So the conspiracy is real, and the conspirators had a conspiracy to give us conspiracy theories to whatever, make us crazy, make us fight amongst ourselves, mostly waste our time, I would say, because it does not, like, once you crack the code on a couple of these false flag psyops, you're like, people ask me all the time, well, what about this? What about that? Like, people like you will say, like, about the latest false flag. It's like, I haven't cracked the code on a false flag in, like, 7 years, because I can tell by looking at them. And if every once in a while something's real, and to tell you the truth, the only time I'm wrong is when I'm like, it could be real. I'm always wrong. But the big thing is the black pill. They want you to be black pilled, and also, if you aren't black pilled, if you do have hope, I think they want you to completely step off the grid. I think that was one of the things they were thinking about for the vax thing. Obviously, was like the draft. You know, dodging the draft. It's like easy to neutralize people politically if they can't participate, and if they opt out, and they know they're opting out, so they have to move to Canada or wherever. So I do think that that's part of the plan. The black pill is a big part of the plan. And so the more truth you hear sometimes, and isn't there someone, my producer said that there is a place in the Bible where it says basically like, it's really not your job to worry about the evil machinations of the power on earth. I wish I knew that quote. Somebody else.
Yeah. We can only fortify our own spirits and our own souls. We can't stop what's currently in existence, because according to the Bible, you know, a contract has been signed, and this is the devil's realm until the return of Christ. So we kind of just have to live with a really, really bad housekeeper at the moment who doesn't mean the best for us, but you know, we can do our best.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, we need to keep it alive, because there has to be, I think I even got the URL in case I ever wanted to make a show of this, the ragtag remnant. We are the ragtag remnant. We are going to, our descendants will be, you know, they will be filthy and in rags and in that line, you know, they'll be going to the right. But I think you just have to do your best to not break the chain. And I mean, I actually think it's interesting to see, it's interesting to like crack the code or put together the puzzle. Like I like to talk about the stories in the news every single day. Like, I just think it's amazing. It's only interesting because some people don't see it. Like, that's what's amazing to me. I'm like, this is ridiculous. How do you not see what's really going on? And I think that we need to know what's going on so you can prepare to survive, like you're saying, prepare physically, mentally, emotionally. I mean, they're waging a war against our mental health and our children's sanity. I mean, wow, you've got to know they're doing that to know that your kid isn't actually insane. She just has a phone.
Yeah, they've got a lot of weapons up their sleeve to really, I think it's as much as it is a physical and a psychological warfare, it's all going for the soul and the spirit, because you look at the weapons that they're using, nihilism, ego, all these things break down what it means to be human. They are very human things that we crave and want. That's why it's, you know, the original sin, all these things that are so appealing to us, but ultimately it's a detriment to our soul as human beings through nihilistic thinking, through atheism, all these things that are detaching us from what it means to be human. And what it means to be human is to have the divine spark and the Holy Spirit is within us at all times. What they're doing is so dark. And that's why I think people do fall into that trap, because they see that this is a battle you can't possibly win, but it's not for us to win. It's just for us to experience.
Yeah, no,
it.
You're not, you are only in charge of your own battle. Don't worry about the war. And that's what my mother used to say. You get so worked up about this stuff. Don't you know God is in his heaven? God is in his heaven, and things will unfold the way they're supposed to. So, and she was right. She knew I lacked faith because I would get super worried about this stuff. And another thing you said about like that they want you to just be obsessed with the things that like please you or whatever. It's not just that, but they also want you to be selfish and disconnected. That disconnection, generational disconnection, even familial, like the vax and politics and stuff, like tear families apart. That's why I just never, like my father basically didn't talk to any of the kids who just, you know, whatever, didn't go to church, stuff like that. And I would never, ever do that because I'm never going to give up. And I don't want to alienate these kids, and I want them to be self-actualized. And I feel like the truth is the truth. My truth is not fragile. And I think that people will, if you teach people to be really, really honest with themselves, even that feeling like where you look at what you don't like about yourself, or I tell them, you're going to sin. The worst thing you can do is pretend that you're not sinning. Like, don't be like, well, it's not that bad because blah, 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 blah. Like, do it, man. you're screwing that guy. That's fine. But don't act like there's no God, so it doesn't matter. I'm like, that's what you're going to do. I'm like, go to mass, just don't go to communion. Like, don't give up on morality just because you don't have that. You can't resist the temptations that are constantly thrown at us. Because the reason I do it that way is because I want them to, I just want them, when the time comes, to feel like they can come back.
Yeah, and it's, you just mentioned the idea of what happens over generations and multi-generations, not breaking that chain. You can see within the West that we often look at people from foreign countries, whether that's say Latin America or Asia, they're very strong family roots, and you can have multiple generations living within the same house, looking after their elders. That's what we used to do. We used to do that over 100 years ago. The West used to live like that. My own region that I live in, it's a regional farming country, and you would have the initial farmhouse, and then with the son or the daughter, they found a spouse and they'd get married. You would build a new house on the farm. And that's how all these allotments came into being, because you would work together as a family more traditionally. And we saw the traditional family get replaced with a nuclear family, and all that did was disconnect the children from the parents. And now we're in this situation where our most knowledgeable people have experienced things throughout their whole lives, where in a lot of situations where handing them over to a state or a corporation, and they're dealing with them. So that disconnect and breaking of chains has happened at a family level, and that's not even taking into consideration things that are happening at a government or nation level, because everything starts within the home.
I wish I had the actual quote, but Bismarck basically said to Wilhelm, the Kaiser, he was worried because the people were not loving him, and they were too independent, because I guess the Industrial Revolution, I hope I got my like eras right. I believe it was the Industrial Revolution that just gave them, the people, money, enough sustenance. And I've heard this as a political theory for sure. As people have no needs, they have no need for government. You have to have fear to have the hierarchy, for sure. And I always think of it as fiscal or physical. If you've got fiscal fear, you're on the left. If you're physical fear, you're on the right. So Bismarck said to, basically invented the modern welfare state for, and said to the Kaiser, they will love you in their dependency. So we'll take a little bit of their money now, or take enough so that they're not independent. We'll give it back to them later, but they have to go through us. And so I think welfare, social security, unemployment, all of these features of the welfare state that we consider to be safety nets are first and foremost designed to do what you're talking about. And the funny thing is, part of it, I heard one libertarian guy, I forget who it was, say that parents used to have to live with the kids, so they'd have to have your back room. And they are the ones who don't want to do that. So families would break apart because the old people would want to go live in their own place, or assisted living, or whatever. And I think this is true. It keeps people from being nice to each other. It's like Uber. Uber would, I don't know if it still does it, but they rate you. Before they were allowed to tip, they would just rate you. And people all from all countries, all creeds, all ethnicities, we were so nice to each other because you did not want to be rejected when you needed a ride. And it was amazing. It was brief, but it was amazing. And when you are counting, that's what I say to my kids, like, I don't care if you treat me respectfully or not, but I'm not going to be disrespected in my house. And you're 18 now, so you got a choice. And that's the way I think the idea is that families are just much less functional because they don't have to be nice to each other, because they don't have to earn that place in the house of the person who controls it. And I mean, it's pretty hierarchical, I guess, but it really goes to probably like the strongest male, like, you know, the 40-year-old male or whatever. Like, that's probably the one who's calls the shots. But hierarchy in a home is good.
Yeah, well, it even speaks to that within the idea of the Bible, and, you know, who's the leader of the house, and it puts in place the moral compass and the cultural things that we value as Westerners has been lost along the way through these methods of attack that they use to bring us down as a society and people. You mentioned the safety net there. And the safety net's a funny one because we've had the safety net for so long as Westerners, the US, Australia, Britain, what have you. We've had it for so long that there's generations that don't know of a life without it. And that in itself kind of it drives fear because people will go, well, if the government didn't have a soup kitchen, how would people ever eat? Or if the schools didn't hand out breakfast to unfortunate children, how would those children ever eat? We can't get rid of it because there would be anarchy and people would starve and you're a horrible first person for suggesting that the safety net shouldn't be there. So what's your approach to that? If the safety net has been weaponized in a way that keeps us dependent on Big Daddy government, what's the answer on a, say, a small community level? What could we do instead?
Well, I think it starts with something I read in Our Enemy, the State by Albert J. Nock, where he said he knew that all was lost as long as people think of a job as something to be given. A job is not something to be given. We are human beings. We have thumbs. Obviously, by our nature, we are here to work. And the only, in my opinion, there's really only two reasons for people to not be able to work enough to eat. If there is widespread famine and food shortages, which I do not think is something that's true on this earth at all now. We have far too much food. The like modern problem is overproduction of everything and barriers to work, policy barriers to work, minimum wage or, you know, border fuckery or whatever, like whatever it is. I have always said, now, if you're talking about handicapped people, but I think that even handicapped people, so my son who has Down syndrome is totally able to produce as much as he needs to consume. So the bar is lower than that. And thanks to modern technology, maybe, but maybe not. Plus, a lot of the illnesses are a function of probably intentional policies. You know, so we think of like 40% of the people are ill and dysfunctional. That's ridiculous. It should be like 4%. So I have always felt, for me, I could, if you have a, I always say this is the baseline to my kids and stuff. If there's some old lady who needs somebody to live with her and she has a tiny corner with a bed that's as big as your body and she can afford to feed you if you clean her house and take care of her and watch her, and that's all you're getting is three squares and a cot, that's your baseline. And I would argue that almost nobody falls under, you know, the few people who would fall under that, if you had a family, there's a certain obligation there or a neighborhood or anything. And, you know, this is real libertarian stuff. Like in a free society, you would have so much prosperity and wealth and all of that, that you could easily take care of the people who couldn't take care of themselves. And then you would have problems of like, if people got knocked up all the time, like if, you know, you all of a sudden were incapacitated because you had babies, but it's just like the border thing. Like they have this thing, this law coming down on in Texas, like where the Texas state wants to be able to deport people if they cross not at a checkpoint. And my answer was they won't let it be implemented until the Constitution, the constitutionality of it is established. And my answer was they won't let it be implemented because they know damn well that within a month, nobody's crossing, not on the checkpoints. Just the natural consequences of the behavior in one generation, one cycle, basically extinguishes the behavior. So if you were an irresponsible person, yeah, they would probably, you know, maybe feed your baby and not feed you for a while, you know, like whatever. But there are examples of this historically. So people are afraid of it. But I always find that when you're trying, like for me as a libertarian, I would always say, don't look at the solution. Look at what the cause is. It's always, and same thing for your health. What drugs are you using, basically? What pills are you taking? How much, you know, how refined is the food that you're eating? Eliminate all that stuff first. Don't take sleeping pills until you quit coffee. So you don't need a welfare state until you eliminate all the things that cause the problems in the first place. And I feel like if you start with the absolute basic unsubstitutable thing, which is I need something to wear, I need something to eat. I need water. It's not that much. What's standing in my way of getting that myself?
Exactly. That's Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You don't need all the bells and whistles that come along with life. You don't have to keep up with the Joneses and have the car and the boat and the holiday house. What are your baseline needs?
It's bad for you. Uncle Ted was right.
He definitely was.
Yeah,
I identify with that guy, he's quite scary, and it doesn't help that I'm growing a crazy beard at the moment.
Yeah, well, I wonder sometimes if he did the killings.
Well, yeah, was he just a scapegoat that was used?
Or to discredit him because they were afraid
live in a time now where if you care about your own health, you try to grow your own organic food, you're freedom-minded, you try to educate your own children, you're starting to be spoken about as a domestic terrorist threat.
Oh, you're a racist.
This is all right. Oh, you're a racist. Apparently push-ups are racist now. Push-ups are racist too. So don't.
What are?
Push-ups.
Push-ups.
They're racist, apparently.
Oh, that's hilarious. Okay.
Well,
because you're doing it naked with a cross tattooed on your back. Is that the idea? Is that why?
With Christ written across your knuckles. What a wild time we live in. I'm going to ask you one last question before we finish up the show. Something I love to ask all Americans, because they seem to all have a different perspective on this. What do you think's going to happen with the American Union? Do you think there's going to be some kind of a balkanization of the United States in the future, or is it just going to be the same regurgitation of political parties in and out, and it's the same thing, and people just, you know, like you said, after a generation of people that have been fed bullshit that they kind of forget about it, is it going to be the same, or will you see massive changes in America's history?
I have never been great at, well, I'm not great at predicting the outcome of elections, the like presidential election. So I don't know. Maybe I'm great at this. I'm not sure. But I guess what I would think is that the resistance that's emerging, the civil war, either real or cold, that they're ginning up here is meant to fail, like, in a big way, so that, like, I can't believe that maybe it's still coming, but, like, it would have been, I wouldn't put it past them to do something like get everybody on the right or whatever to not take vaxes and then introduce some pathogen that is so virulent.
I've actually said this myself.
Yeah. Because what could they, yeah, I mean, if they can, I'm not sure they have the technology for that, to be honest with you, you know, because I think they would have made what?
Yeah. Who knows? That's
well, because COVID really wasn't such a killer. It was the ventilators and stuff mm-hmm. that killed people. They had to get you to kill yourself. So I don't know if they can actually do that, but I feel like maybe you're like the Hungarian Revolution is a good example. I think we did it in Iraq also, where you call people to arms so that they will identify themselves and you can gun them down. And I would say, like, another technique they use is that you were so wrong. You know, like, you rose up because this cult of personality with Trump, and look what he did. And, like, I can't stand behind that. Or he's a big fat loser, or you lost everything, you know, whatever. And then I think you just have, you know, I can't help but think you have that kind of, I don't want to say bland, but I feel like the people I knew from, I don't know if it's Germany or Switzerland or, you know, I hate to generalize people because individuals, you know, I'm an individualist, but there's just this bland acceptance of the necessity of socialism, basically. This, like you were saying, exactly. Like, there's just this, you know, this is just the way it is. And it goes hand in hand with elitism, by the way, where the administrative class goes to the better schools. They're actually selected by IQ and stuff. You know, not that we don't kind of do that, but I'm a free thinker and I ended up reaching heights in academia, although I didn't really not run in the world or anything, but it was open to me to go that path. But I could never, because you really have to smoke the Kool-Aid to get those actual jobs. But I did get to go to the schools. But they And that's how come I ended up interacting with these people, a lot of international students. And their attitude is, well, you have to have a lot of rules and regulations. You have to have a welfare state because most people are stupid. That's really how they think. And the only time I ever kind of like even flirted with that idea was when I was on the radio, and it went from the Obama era where I would say, you know, he disrespects the Bill of Rights, and I would get 1,000 calls and be like, yeah, he does. Go, Monica, you know, and then Trump got elected and I was like, he disrespects the Bill of Rights. And I got, what did one guy say? You're quibbling about semantics. I was like, all hope is lost. You are stupid.
If you can't keep people accountable to your own metrics,
I know.
No matter who they are, you're losing your own moral compass and values, aren't you?
Yeah, that was the Trump coup. That's how come I knew. So what I would say is, you know, we'll just drift to that. You know, I live in California, so you're asking me what's the future of America. Like, I'm in it. I'm living it.
California, jeez, that's the template for the United States, isn't it?
Yeah, because I remember I used to smoke a pack of Marlboro Reds a day, and I came out to California, and I mean, they would hurt you, you know. And then I went back to New York, and it was, you know, a couple of years later, and it had hit New York.
I think you're definitely on the money with the idea that a lot of the time we're outing ourselves, and by ourselves, I mean people in the freedom movement in general, we're kind of lifting ourselves up to a visible position. We're standing out from the crowd to where we're noticed now. And I'm definitely sure there's a lot of people on watch lists at the moment. That's a given. But they're doing it very, very savvy in the way that we're the people that are doing it and they don't have to do a lot of the work. Whereas the likes of Mao during the Cultural Revolution in China, he had a policy of a wall of grievances, and he'd allow towns to go and write their issues they have with the government on the wall, and they'd have to write their name next to it. And essentially the same thing. Those people were collected in the dead of night and done away with. And we're kind of doing that in the political war. We're trying to fight a battle that's, it's worth fighting in a lot of ways, but like we've mentioned earlier on in the show, we can't be part of a bigger war. We have to fight our own battles, and we have to fight on our terms, on our ground. We can't fight on a battlefield at the Capitol when it's something that's so far removed from us that we don't actually have we're bringing a knife to a gunfight situation.
Well, I mean, I don't envision like being physically removed because we're twins. We're digital twins. So like, all they'll
it's a
do
digital
is
era, isn't it?
Yeah, they're just going to blink me off of your screen. Yeah, and they'll put someone else there who you think is me, not like deep fake, look like me, but some gal named, you know, Marissa or whatever, who says almost the exact same things that I say, but leaves out things like hope or God or, you know what I mean? Like, just that's how you tell, like, because, you know, 80% of this verse that we're in is glowing. But if you take... that's how I can tell if somebody doesn't, you know, pulls punches or leaves out the real bottom line truth, which is save your soul. And like, I am not coming from a place of holy roller. Like it is hard for me to like, I recently was taking care of my mother as she was dying. And like, we would have to sit and kneel and like do the rosaries and stuff that she would normally do. Because she had all these obligations to pray like 4 hours a day. And I mean, I came back, I could hardly even say like prayer before meals or whatever. Like I was just like so prayed out. I'm not a holy roller, but I do take Pascal's wager seriously, which is it's the only hope. There is no other hope. And if you don't walk the path of righteousness, and oh, you know what? You can even take it from the yogic point of view. Swami Satchidananda, I have a copy of his like Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. And he said, which I don't know which of them it was, but it was in this book, where he said, the question of God is unanswerable and irrelevant because the way to live, and that's another thing my mother said, it's just a better way to live. The answer to how to live is the same whether there's a God or not. And that is to free yourself of desire. And that is the basis of like, so, you know, you can have everything you want if you want nothing. And it's a funny way to put it, but it's, but it's almost like a clean slate. And then what do you want? Oh, well, there's a flower and it smells good. So like, I wanted nothing and I had this thing that's lovely. And you can take joy in just everything. I think I think that's the true nature of reality.
That kind of goes into that old saying that the two greatest things, the worst things that can happen in life is wanting something and not getting it and then getting the thing that you wanted. Sometimes getting it is worse than what?
Don't meet your heroes.
It. Yeah, that's a
deal. Yeah. Well, I mean, I always thought that I worked like a dog because I wanted to be rich because I started out poor. And I discovered that, A, that's not possible. The whole thing is to get you to work like a dog until you're so exhausted that you can't work anymore. And so I was like, so you're telling me by the time I have enough money to like buy nice clothes and have a nice car and everything, I'm going to be like old and wrinkled and not even look cool? It's like, yes, that is the plan. So you don't even, you know what I mean? By the time you get what you want, you're not even that person anymore. So, but it like, I think a part of it, I think my perspective is colored by the fact that, you know, it sounds funny, but I'm happily married and we have kids who are super challenging and we work on that together. And it's like how you grow and it gives meaning to your life. And it goes to Uncle Ted's like power principle. Like it's important, it's doable, it's hard, and it's autonomous. And like, I feel like podcasting's like that too. Like I think it's important to share, you know, it was during lockdown. It was really important during lockdown because people were totally isolated and there were people who had nobody and they would listen to us. And I did the Propaganda Report with my partner, Binkley. They were just so happy because we would just laugh. We were just like, can you believe this bullshit? Blah, 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 blah. And they're like, yes, yes. Like, I can't say that to anybody. So it was important. You know, it's important sometimes. But I think that it comes back to like squaring away your own life. And I actually moved away from that Daily Show because one of the guests said, you know, first, I was like, what should we do? How can we save the world? And he said, well, first tend your own garden. And I was like, you know what? You know, this causes me stress to like be busy all the time. I just have to tend that garden and it bore fruit. And I feel like that's a good lesson to learn. And now look, I'm back and it's fine.
Yeah, it's not a bad thing to pull away sometimes. And I think we're going to see a little bit of that, generally speaking, with the podcasting community within the next 12 months, because, you know, people do come for you to the answers. We're not the people, divine oracles that can solve all the problems in the world. We're just having conversations. And that's what I value about this, is being able to speak to people like yourself that at one point in time, I just listened to. Like, I listened to your show, I listened to you in interviews on other people's platforms, friends of mine. And now to be able to speak to you today, I value that. That's been a great experience in my life. So thank you for coming on the show, Monica.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. I hope that you got to talk about the things you wanted to. I just don't...
We definitely did it and more. Okay. I think we really gelled well and it kind of went off into the directions it needed to.
It's not very natural. And I was like, maybe I'm just talking about what I want to talk about.
No, not at all. Now, for the listeners who may not be familiar with you, where can they find your work?
Well, I just started doing daily news again, except for it's only on Tuesdays and Thursdays, but you can find it whenever you want on the Monica Perez Show podcast on your favorite podcasting platform. And I do it. This is going to be not working probably for you. Oh, it might work for some of your listeners to get up early. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, I do my live newsreel at 2 p.m. California time on YouTube, because I only tell people on YouTube because that's where I get to interact with the chat. But it's great because I take the news of the day and just kind of pull back the curtain on what's coming. And it's super... like it'll give you a heads up. Like I've been talking about these airline problems 3 years ago before they happened. I was like, oh, the FAA has a perfect record, which proves government is not incompetent. And they kind of want to shut down society. So I wouldn't count on that for much longer. But it is proof that government can do a perfect job for 10 years, not a single fatality in U.S. commercial jets. And then all of a sudden it all started unwinding. I keep getting texts like, how did you know? And emails, how did you know? And it's like, it would just look like they were gearing us up for something. So that's the kind of stuff you get. It's fun. And then I do some interviews too, for the same reason you do. I just want to talk to the people. But yeah, it's at the Monica Perez Show, or you can go to monicaperezshow.com for all of, I have like 1,000 shows on that archived.
Awesome. For the listeners, it's always great to get a perspective that's not mainstream American media or the Australian representation of American media of what's going on. Hear it from the horse's mouth, find out what's really going on. Monica really does, like she said, pulls back the curtain on these things and pulls them apart. Fantastic content. And a massive shout out to Stella for organizing this conversation. Thanks, mate. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Drew.
No worries. And all listeners, we'll catch you next time.
Hey, everybody. It's closing time. You don't got to go home, but you can't stay here.